The oral histories of the Eastern Shoshone tribe say their ancestors have lived in the Wind River Basin for time immemorial. Now, there's a history to help explore the tribe's relationship with the ecosystem of the area. Adam Hodge is an associate professor of history at Lourdes University in Ohio and author of the new book, Ecology and Ethnogenesis, an Environmental History of the Wind River Shoshones, 1000 to 1868. Wyoming Public Radio's Taylor Stagner spoke with Hodge.
Can you define ethnogenesis for me?
Sure. Yeah, most simply, it is the emergence and evolution of distinct social cultural groups over time and space.
Why is it important to use ethnogenesis when looking at Native cultures, especially pre-contact?
I think ethnogenesis is really important to look at, not just for Native cultures, but for any culture, really. I think it's important to, better understand where you're at and where you're going. I think you got to know where you come from. And I think specifically, the emphasis on environment is a huge piece, especially in today's day and age where so many of our, challenges and opportunities, although at times it seems more like it's challenges than anything else, have a huge environmental piece. The environment is a huge piece of that process that defines people. Of course, you don't want to verge onto the side of environmental determinism where, it's just the environment acting on people and putting limitations on it. There's certainly a piece of that, but there is, of course, the human agency side as well, where there is this back and forth sort of relationship. And that's really why I emphasize ecology is people part of something bigger. They affect it. It affects them. So really emphasizing that ethnogenesis piece, I think, gets at a core piece of not just the Native experience, but it's a core piece of the human experience.
I really liked in your book how you focus a lot on pre-contact. Can you tell me a little bit about your decision-making process for that?
I really value the quote-unquote pre-contact past because I think it's something that historians have generally overlooked. As far as the sources, as far as the materials go, it doesn't fall very much into the traditional historian's craft of written documentation, especially when you start to talk about the environmental piece. That opens up whole new opportunities for looking at tools such as tree ring studies and things like that that give some level of a deeper level of understanding of that distant past where a lot of that has been, the province of archaeologists, anthropologists, maybe getting through oral traditions, things like that. I think it's really important for historians to not be so tentative in looking at that past, because if we just focus on a post-contact past, well, what shaped the indigenous cultures that Lewis and Clark, that others interacted with in the early 19th century, if you want to go back to the French fur traders, in the late 18th century, whatever, there needs to be a broader historical context. And I think when you ignore or downplay the pre-contact past, where you have like a chapter that gets us up to Lewis and Clark, it does a disservice to it. And you have an idea or this misconception that, well, Native Americans were here, things were great to have this. Well, they're just sort of hanging around waiting for something to happen. It's a total fallacy. And nobody necessarily portrays it as such, especially today. But I think that when you neglect the pre-contact past, that is sort of the message that comes across.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Why do you think oral traditions from tribes become dismissed in quote-unquote hard sciences or a history? Or what do you think?
I think there is, in terms of, what animals or animal figures are present in these? What landscapes are sort of described? Or what values do they impart? I think it's a matter of if you're looking at those as an academic and you're looking, you're trying to glean certain types of information or certain insights from it, it can be wholly useful. But I think there's this broader tendency of, well, if parts of it are unreliable or if parts of it might have been changed or evolved over time, then it's totally unreliable and useless. And I disagree with that because you can make arguments about any historical document, whether it is bias, whether it is completeness, whether it is a certain perspective or if there's an agenda in place. So to argue you know, that there are too many weaknesses, if you will, with oral traditions is just that's automatically dismissing a trove context and understanding for how people live.
How did you become interested in specifically the Eastern Shoshone tribe?
Travel when I was younger, family trips, you know, and one of the areas we went through was Wind River Canyon. But then when I started to get into my graduate studies and I was researching a smallpox epidemic in the late 18th century, and one of the groups that came up that was deeply impacted by that epidemic was the Eastern Shoshone. A lot of the stuff on Eastern Shoshone history a lot of it's really dated, like 1950s and earlier. And there was a broader sense on my part of marginalization in American history of the Eastern Shoshone. I felt that there was a bigger role here in that past that needed to be brought out. I really grew to appreciate, and I hope this is something that comes through in the book, the lay of the land, just the ecological diversity and the richness of resources, connecting as much as possible with that past, talking to the people, getting your feet on the ground. And sometimes I think history can be a little abstract and that it is divorced from the past that, you know, it's about. So it was absolutely phenomenal.
That was Adam Hodge, the author of Ecology and Ethnogenesis, an environmental history of the Wind River Shoshones. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Taylor Stagner.